Good morning. Today we're continuing with the letter of James, and I'm going to read James 3, verses 13 to 18. Are there any of you who are wise and understanding? You are to prove it by your good life, by your good deeds performed with humility and wisdom. But if in your heart you are jealous, bitter, and selfish, don't sin against the truth by boasting of your wisdom. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven. It belongs to the world. It's unspiritual and demonic. Where there is jealousy and selfish, there is also disorder and every kind of evil. But the wisdom from above is pure, first of all. It's also peaceful, gentle, and friendly. It's full of compassion and produces a harvest of good deeds. It is free from prejudice and hypocrisy. And goodness is the harvest that is produced from the seeds the peacemakers plant in peace. Now, generally, we make knowledge and success the yardstick for measuring wisdom. If someone's kids are out of control, you don't go and listen to them talk about effective parenting. And if they're bankrupt, you don't expect them to be an independent financial advisor. Success is the thing that usually makes a person sought after. So we pay due deference to the experts like Bill Gates and entrepreneurs like Richard Branson. I heard it said that you can tell the difference between an expert and an entrepreneur by the holidays they take. Experts operate within their areas of expertise, so when they take a holiday, they like a challenge and will do something daring. Entrepreneurs are always operating outside their comfort zones, so on holiday they're happy just to lie on a beach. We start by identifying who's successful, and then we look for insight and knowledge. There's a science to everything. Supermarkets are a classic example. You enter to fresh fruit and vegetables, discover that all the staple foods are spread out, forcing you to walk the length of the shop. And then when you come to the shelves, the budget items are down by your feet, the more expensive ones are eye level. Successful businesses understand what makes people tick and then exploit it to the full. But success is not everything. On Valentine's Day 2010, 3 months before the Labour Party lost power, Prime Minister Gordon Brown was interviewed by Piers Morgan. He shared something of his and his wife Sarah's pain when their first child, Jennifer, died at the tender age of just 10 days. Some wrote this off as a publicity stunt, and if so, it worked well until that day when he left his microphone switched on and called someone a bigot. His ratings soared, especially among women. The author, J.K. Rowling, commented, "I know him as affable, funny and gregarious, a great listener, a kind and loyal friend." And success doesn't always last. Most of us admire Nelson Mandela as a unique statesman, but his success in South Africa did not outlive him. His deputy in the 90s, Jacob Zuma, dominated the political landscape from 2009 to 2018, but he was constantly mired in allegations of corruption, allegedly costing the economy hundreds of billions of dollars. Eventually, he was hung out to dry by his own party. The quest for justice, despite Mandela's enormous legacy, has faced numerous setbacks and is still going on in South Africa. So, if success is not the only measure of wisdom, what other measures are there? And this is where the Bible encourages us to look at two other things, goodness and humility. James says that wisdom is not about what you know, but about what you do. Who is wise and understanding among you, he says. Let him show it by his good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. So let me talk first of all about goodness. Whilst we may place value on experience and knowledge, James says that wisdom is inseparable from goodness. You can't have a wise tyrant, because if he were wise, he wouldn't be a tyrant. Criminals may be clever, but they're not wise. Politicians may be good orators, and they may come up with clever policies, but the mark of a good policy is that it serves the common good, the many, not the few. Wisdom must always be connected to goodness. Verse 14 gives examples of things that make you unwise: bitterness, envy, and selfish ambition. These are the drivers in so many people's lives. I mean, how many of you would say that loyalty is a fine quality? You have to ask, loyalty to what? The terrorist may be loyal to his cause, but loyalty is only a virtue when it's to something good. And the same is true of wisdom. For James, a wise decision has to be a good decision. A wise person is a good person. That's why the New Testament writers insisted that church leaders should be people of exemplary character. And so, as we read on, the wisdom from above is pure, first of all. It's also peaceful, gentle and friendly. It's full of compassion and produces a harvest of good deeds. It's free from prejudice and hypocrisy. The sad thing is that goodness has such a bad press these days. We talk about do-gooders sneeringly. Recently, since the murder of George Floyd by police, there has been a big debate about removing the statues of dubious people, especially those associated with the slave trade. With emotions running high, it can be difficult to have a level-headed debate about the statues, and the danger is that we might do an Islamic State and start knocking everything down. The 800-year-old Angkor Wat in Cambodia will have to go, built as it was using cheap and perhaps even slave labour. But then that would be bad news for Cambodian tourism. Commemorative arches to Roman tyrants, the Colosseum, the pyramids, where do you stop? All comedians before the 1970s. By the year 2100, how much will be left? And then there's that song that we Christians sing. If you should mark our transgressions, who could stand? The Christian faith doesn't allow you to self-righteously point the finger at others when your own virtues are questionable. But then goodness is not just about your failings. It's about doing positive things, showing care and compassion to those around, using your skills to benefit others without always charging them, finding simple ways to make life better for those who are struggling. Luke 6 verse 38 suggests that God looks after those who are generous with their money. This is wise behaviour, for there's a widely accepted rule in life that kindness begets kindness. If you do good to others, they will do good to you. Yes, there are always exceptions, and some of us live with deep-seated prejudices, but wisdom encourages us to do good whenever and wherever we can. And then the second thing is humility. Wise people are not pushy, not full of themselves and the gifts God has given them. Ah, but, you say, you have to push yourself forward if you're going to get on in this life. But the Bible takes you back a step. What do you mean by getting on in life? Is the goal of life to make a name for yourself, or is it something else? Wise people are humble. They don't push themselves forward at the expense of others. They endeavour to understand people and value them. Percy Fender was a cricketer from another era. He captained Surrey throughout the 1920s and was described by many as the greatest county captain never to captain England. He was a middle-order batsman and a leg-spin bowler and had 13 disappointing outings for England. But his captaincy of Surrey marked him out as a shrewd tactician, alert to the strengths and weaknesses of his own players, and with a knack of surprising opposing batsmen who were well settled. Rather like Mike Brearley in the late 1970s, he performed unremarkably himself, but brought out the best in others. It's not sexy to be unremarkable, and when James was writing, humility wasn't even considered a virtue. It was a novel idea. Gentleness was considered weakness, and submissiveness was the role of a woman, not a man. The measure of strength was how you controlled situations and people. Actually, I think a lot of unremarkable people are truly remarkable. They just don't get the plaudits. When I trained for ministry in South Norwood back in the 1970s, Bernard Wetherill was the local MP. He was also Speaker of the House of Commons. One evening he was invited to Spurgeon's to talk about leadership. Talked about the importance of vision and wisdom and resilience and had this thing about not getting too close to people. Sadly, there was no mention of goodness and humility. Jesus' eight Beatitudes, or beautiful attitudes, as Billy Graham once described them, start with the poor in spirit. And as he reflected on the fact that each of us is just one member of Christ's body, Paul wrote in Romans 12 verse 3, "Do not think of yourself more highly than you ought." Jesus pointed out to his ambitious disciples, the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve. And before the celebrated Last Supper, he took a towel and washed his disciples' feet. Apparently, this story made quite an impression on Queen Elizabeth I, who made arrangements to perform this humble act of foot washing for her subjects on Maundy Thursday every year. What she never knew was that each one was given a thorough bath before they got anywhere near the Queen, just in case the reality check was too shocking for her. No doubt wisdom can involve knowledge and experience and even success, but it must not be divorced from goodness and humility. Jesus, says Paul, did not count equality with God something to be grasped at, but humbled himself, taking the form of a servant and becoming obedient even to the point of death on a cross. As the wordsmiths remind us, humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. And here's another good one. Never look down on anybody unless you're helping them to get up. So in your quest to be wise, and it's a good quest, don't overlook James's insight. Goodness and humility are where you need to start.